This is 50% Renewable, a podcast from the National Trust. I'm Lucy Green, a professor of physics in UCL's Department of Space and Climate Physics, where my passion is for the sun, our star that is centrally important to all of our lives. And as a scientist, I'm committed to achieving a sustainable future. Now, as the National Trust moves towards its 2021 target of generating 50% of its power from renewable sources, I'll be taking a 750-mile trip around England and Wales to look at five of more than 100 renewable energy schemes that are being worked on across the Trust. This may give us some insight into what a sustainable energy future could look like for all of us. One of the partners helping achieve this goal is BMWI, who are helping enhance renewable energy technology at the places the National Trust care for and enabling visitors to charge their cars at more of the properties. They've also supplied us with an all-electric BMW i3 for the journey, and they have helped bring this podcast to you.
This last leg of my journey takes me to a location where all of the technologies have been put together to create, I think, what is actually the holy grail of sustainable living, the National Trust's first 100% off-grid property. Today, I've come to Hardcastle Crags in West Yorkshire, and at the heart of this property is Gibson Mill, a once dilapidated and unloved building that's now the Trust's flagship sustainability project. And my first impression is that this is actually the ideal location because it's at least a mile from any mains electricity or gas, and there's no established road for me to walk to the property on. So to get there, I'm going to head through the woodland. It's really great to be back in this part of the country. I used to come here a lot when I was younger, walking holidays, swimming in the lakes and the rivers around here. I think Yorkshire is just an amazing place to come and explore. I'm due to meet Murray Chalmers, who is Gibson Mill's facilities coordinator, about halfway through my walk to the mill, which hopefully means he should be just around the corner. And I can see Murray up ahead. Hi, Murray.
Hello.
I'm Lucy. Good to meet you.
Yes, and you. Beautiful day.
It's fantastic. Thank you for arranging the weather for me. Well, let's carry on our walk up to the mill. Tell me a bit about when the heyday of the mill was.
Well, there were probably two mill heydays. Its heyday as a mill was in the early part of the 19th century. It lasted as a spinning mill and also as a weaving mill until about 1900. After that, it became an entertainment complex.
At the height of its second heyday, Gibson Mill boasted a dance hall, restaurant, roller rink, pavilions, boating lake and campsite. Thousands of people would descend on the valley from the surrounding towns and cities, seeking fun, food and peaceful recreation.
Well, we've been walking for about 20 minutes now, Murray. Are we nearly there?
Almost there, yeah. Just round the corner and, well, there it is, lit up by sunlight.
It is, isn't it, emerging out of the trees.
And there's the river.
That will explain why the river is now sounding so much louder.
The sound of that river is a dead giveaway to the fact that 75% of this site's electrical energy is produced by two hydro turbines.
How long has water been used here?
Well, the mill opened in around about 1800. At that point, it was water powered. So there was a water wheel and that turned the machinery that enabled them to spin cotton thread.
And today, the electricity that you generate on site, what does that power?
Primarily the cafe. That's our biggest user of power on site. We've got a small shop area that requires lighting. And then we have our office, which use quite a lot.
What other renewables have you got on this site at Gibson's Mill?
Well, apart from the hydro generation, we've got a few other low and high-tech solutions, which we'll see inside.
OK, let's have a look.
In we go. And here's the energy room.
On the wall of this tea room come power station is an array of cables, boxes, switches and dials that I hoped would answer a question I still had. If 75% of the electricity is coming from hydropower, where is the rest coming from?
The PV meter, that's solar power, is reading 2 kilowatts and the hydro turbine is reading 1.5 kilowatts.
Outside you were telling me how, actually most of your power comes from hydro, but if I look at the dials, you're getting more from the sun.
Solar panels will be generating that for about 5-6 hours of the day. Outside of that, it'll be pretty much zero and it's down to the small hydro turbine.
And I can see the batteries, there's a fairly large bank of batteries running 2 or 3 metres down the wall.
Everything we generate goes into the battery and everything we use comes back out of the battery again. Even though we could carry on generating power, we can't use that power unless we have a battery.
So these batteries are fundamentally important to the running of this site.
These ones were replaced earlier this year.
And what would have happened if you hadn't been able to replace the batteries?
It's possible that we could have come in one morning and found that we had no power and were unable to run the cafe at all, and therefore our main source of income dries up.
Must be quite an expensive thing to replace.
They cost over £40,000 to replace, and we were grateful for a contribution towards that from BMW.
Well, I think I've got a pretty good understanding now of how you're generating electricity on the site, but I can't help noticing it's pretty cold in this room and we're both wearing gloves and woolly hats.
Yeah.
What do you do for heating here?
Well, we've got a solution for that. If you'd like to come through to another part of the mill, we'll take a look.
Oh, what do we have in here? I feel like you've brought me into a barn, Murray.
This is our biomass boiler.
It's very different to the biomass boiler that I saw in Felbrigg, which was much larger, taller than I am. This is,
yep.
I mean, this is really a sort of, small log-burning stove.
Wood that we produce on site, we burn it in here, which gives the cafe a good supply of water for a day's washing up.
I mean, it's pretty small, isn't it, for a large estate like this? Does it power everything?
No, we have a biomass stove for the cafe, keeps the cafe nice and warm. And we also have a biomass stove in the office, which heats radiators and provides hot water.
You've got quite a lot of work to do filling up these boilers and monitoring the electricity generation.
There's 3 fires to light every day in winter and keep filled with wood.
Up until now, I had encountered this technology at other trust properties, but that buzzing you can hear in the background is the sound of something completely different.
Well, that noise you can hear in the background is their water purification system.
Oh, so you have, a spring in the woods and then the water's brought in?
Yeah, so the water is filtered and then it's also passed through an ultraviolet screen to kill any bugs, and that provides all the water that we need on site.
OK, I'm not sure if I'm going to regret saying this, but can I try the water?
Yeah, of course you can. There's a tap over here.
OK. Oh, it's good I can hear the filtration system kick in. What? It's perfectly clear.
There you go.
That is great. It
pure spring water.
Doesn't taste of anything at all. I'm going to have a bit more. Well, I've drunk the water now, and that's not the end of the process, is it? So how can I put this delicately? What do you do about toilets on an off-grid site?
Well, if you want to come with me, we'll go outside across the bridge and we'll take a look.
OK, Murray, so where are these toilets?
Well, we've got 2 types of toilets on site, and we'll go and have a look at the staff toilets first.
OK, behind this wooden door.
Come in.
Oh.
And there's some instructions
right.
on how to use it.
OK, well, I haven't had to have instructions on how to use a toilet for quite some time. I'm going in. I'm going to have a look. So, OK, so bucket toilets sit down, men as well as women.
Yep.
And then you...
I mean, basically, it says pee in the front bit, poo and paper in the back bit, and then a handful of sawdust in the back bit. Every couple of days, I empty this, take the bucket over, and put it into the compost.
I see. So the solids here, they don't go anywhere. You have to physically take them out.
We've got to physically take them out.
This is the staff toilet, presumably.
Yes.
So you don't have to move too much.
That's right. The public toilets are over the bridge.
Okay,
so
let's
go and have a look at those. Over here are our public toilets. If we just want to go in here.
OK, so we're going into this wooden building.
Upstairs.
Oh, OK. Oh, this is completely different. This looks like any other set of toilets at a National Trust property.
They are, yes.
So what makes these ones sustainable?
Well, that all happens downstairs.
OK, let's head back down then. Okay, there's a big metal unit in front of us. Can I take one of the lids off?
We can take this one off.
Okay.
If you like. This is wormed human waste compost.
Okay, I wasn't expecting you to say that it's worms that deal with toilets.
In here we've got some lovely brown compost which has been sitting here resting for about 6 months.
I can see that there are some, well, it looks like plants growing in this compost.
Well, you're obviously aware that tomato seeds pass through the human digestive system unharmed.
We've got tomato plants
growing in
there.
I'm
a big fan of urban tomatoes that spring up, and it shows actually how good the compost is that plants are readily growing in.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this is absolutely fantastic. I wasn't expecting this at all. And, I mean, if I can be blunt as well, it doesn't smell at all.
No, it doesn't. This tank isn't being filled at the moment, so there is nothing fresh in here at all. If you want, we can open the other tank that's being filled at the moment and have a look in there.
Why not? I'm not going to get this chance again, am I? Shall I hold my nose?
So this tank is filling at the moment.
Okay, that's completely different.
Totally different, yes.
That's more like I was expecting. So there's everything in there, loo roll and everything.
Yes, we've got millions of tiger worms chomping their way through all of that and turning it into the compost we saw in the other tank.
I can see the worms, actually.
You can, yes.
They look perfectly happy.
There's quite a lot of them there at the moment. They're quite happy. As well as poo and paper, we do occasionally get stuff put down the toilets that shouldn't really be there. So that can be anything from cotton buds, sanitary products, wet wipes, to T-shirts and stuff like that.
T-shirts?
Yes, I have on one occasion fished a T-shirt out of one of these tanks.
Hearing that from you, Murray, about having to fish things out of the tank, which I'm sure is not very pleasant, I think it really drives home that there's two sides to this. National Trust are doing what they can to be sustainable, but the visitors here also have a responsibility too.
Yeah.
And indeed, when we all go back to our homes afterwards, we should take that with us. At home, you put something down the toilet, you don't know where it goes.
Yeah.
Here, you actually do.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's put that lid back on. I've seen enough.
It doesn't smell too bad, does it?
I have to say it doesn't. Seeing the contents of those tanks was nearly enough to put me off my lunch. Unfortunately for me, the next stop was the site's tea shop, where I'd be meeting Fiona, Gibson Mills' food and beverage manager.
Well,
Fiona, good to meet you.
Hi.
What are the challenges that you face here?
Always there's a big conversation about the weather. If the sun's shining, we want to know, is it going to be shining all morning? Are we likely to have sun all day? Or whether or not the rain's going to set in and we're stuck with the amount of power that we've got. And then we'll give consideration to what menu we can run.
What about the equipment that you use here? Do you have any, I don't know, high-tech gadgets in here that help you manage the energy usage?
Well, let me come show you what we've got behind the counter. We actually have a new bottle fridge. It doesn't have fans. It's a very energy efficient system. Then we go from quite high tech to our coffee and hot drink setup. We've got a really traditional filter machines, thermal jugs, because we simply just don't have enough power on site to be able to run traditional barista machines. They're permanently hot, they're permanently drawing energy. So if I take you through to the kitchen and you can have a look through here, we have two really good induction hobs. They heat very, very quickly. As soon as you switch them off, they lose heat straight away. We'll do all our hot food preparation in advance and we hold them in our bain-marie, which doesn't use a lot of power.
What's on the menu today?
Let's have a look. I'll show you where the menu boards are.
Okay, so I can see the menu boards that you've got up, and you've got a range of sandwiches, a special soup of the day, salad, kids' selection of food. How would that menu vary, say, for example, on a day where you've not got very much power?
With the soups, we actually have to think about which soup we're doing. So an example of that would have been changed from doing a parsnip and apple soup with root vegetables to a mushroom soup, which takes about half the time to cook.
And what about the sandwiches? Are they affected at all?
People can get all the same range of sandwiches apart from the egg mayonnaise, which, again, it's about boiling eggs.
You have to cook the eggs on site.
Absolutely, yes.
What would be the worst case scenario then? If you came in one morning and you were really low on power, you've had several busy days on site, how would the menu change then?
I think in those extreme situations, We would look at equipment that we could turn off. And then ultimately, we have had that situation where we've not been able to serve hot drinks.
So how do visitors here react to the changing menu?
Sometimes it can be quite a hard message to get across because people get the idea about turning lights off to save energy, but actually equating to the use of energy in order to then make tea or make coffee, it can be an interesting conversation to have.
I think we definitely take it for granted, don't we? You flick a kettle on and hot water's there just a few minutes later. So it's clear to me that you have some really difficult decisions here to make in the cafe and that you are central in raising revenue for the site. So how does this affect the bottom line of running this site?
Well, I think the person you need to talk to really is Chris, who is our operations manager. And if you want to pop over to our office.
Great. Well, Fiona, thank you very much. I'll head off and find Chris. Hi, you must be Chris. Good to meet you and
nice
good to see
you
again, Murray, too. Hello. I've definitely been learning today about the complexity of running this site. Is it really sustainable for all aspects of the site?
There's definitely an aspect of difficulty with everything we do operationally, from the type of computers that we've run, all the way through to whether or not we can have a wedding that's allowed to have a band or not.
What things would you have to put in place during the week to make sure that you've got enough energy to run the event?
Just making sure that we're liaising with the cafe about what they're cooking. We might even decide to kind of keep the lights off in the mill, for example, if we've got an exhibition or something.
What about the economics of this site? You're very good at utilising natural resources on your doorstep. So does it work out to be very cost effective?
I think there's quite often an assumption made that renewable energy is free. There is a maintenance cost in everything here. You know, we can be paying anything between £4,000 and £10,000 a year.
So was the decision to go off-grid a sort of moral decision rather than an economic decision?
The predicted cost of a connection to the grid was something in the region of £300,000, and the renewables element of the project was something in the region of £240,000. So the capital input at the time was cheaper. So there was a fairly good financial reason for choosing off-grid.
I mean, there's clearly lessons you're learning here about future use of energy.
Talking about conserving energy, Lucy, we've got one more energy-saving device on site that I think you'll be interested in.
And we've got to go back outside?
We've got to go back outside and into the mill.
Oh, it's a bit dark.
It is.
There you are. Oh.
Come in.
Wow, it looks like a lift.
It's basically a hand-powered lift.
Brilliant. Well, can I give it a go?
You can.
Let me switch on and
if
off.
You want to pull on this
okay,
rope
so,
with both
oh,
hands.
Oh, with both hands. Okay, let's give this a go. Oh, that's surprisingly easy.
Yep.
I mean, that's still a bit of a workout, but we're not racing up, are we?
It's a bit slower than an electric lift, but it's far more fun.
Okay. Right, I'm getting a bit out of breath now.
You are, yeah.
But we're nearly there.
You're nearly there. You've done very well.
Oh. In my arms. Okay.
There
yes.
You go. Right. Brake on. Doors open.
Well, Murray, this place is great, and that lift is certainly a lot of fun. but this site is complex, isn't it? And it's hard work. Do you think that society as a whole is ready for that kind of commitment?
I don't think it's necessary for people to go running off home and start developing compost toilets. It's more about making small changes to your life, small changes to your home. A number of small changes can all build up together towards more of a revolution, really. If people take one thing home with them, thinking about the amount of energy they're using is that thing.
Well, thank you ever so much for showing me around today. It's been an absolute pleasure. I've learned no end, and I'm actually quite sad to go because it's a beautiful,
Good.
Beautiful site.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming. It's been great fun.
Well, I've had a fantastic visit to Gibson Mill today and I'm heading back to the car through the beautiful woodland again. And definitely what I'm going to take away is to be more conscious of the amount of energy I use. I'm not going to just flick the kettle on and cook dinner without thinking about the fact that there are resources enabling me to do that. It's not about being on grid or off grid. It's about assessing where you are and where you want to be and building a plan that will get you there. My touring around the National Trust properties has sadly come to an end, as a long-time visitor to National Trust properties, I've really had my eyes opened to the work that they're doing. And it's been great to see how each site across the country is effectively playing to its strengths. It's looking around to see what natural resources do they have on their doorstep that they can utilise in their aim to become 50% sustainable. And it's made me realise that the heritage and the conservation work is, yes, it's about the past and it's preserving buildings and artefacts and landscapes for us. But the work that they're doing very much behind the scenes is actually about preserving the future for us all.
We do hope you've enjoyed this National Trust podcast. To learn more about this series, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/50%. That's number 50, P-E-R-C-E-N-T, where you'll also find information about what sustainability steps you can take. If you'd like to hear more podcasts from the National Trust, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/podcasts. This is 50% Renewable, a podcast from the National Trust. The production of this podcast has been made possible by BMWi, exclusive automotive partner for the National Trust.